All right, welcome to the Cult It or Can It podcast. My name is Zach, and my guest this evening is...
Bill.
And we're here to talk about the 2009 Judd Apatow directed, produced, and written feature, Funny People, starring Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen, and a melange of other character actors as well, and comedic actors. Without getting too far into the details of the film, right off the bat, Bill, did you like this film or did you dislike this film?
I disliked it in such a big way that I can't wait to tell you more.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing about it. So right off the bat, I know that Bill dislikes it. I'm going to say I kind of half like it and kind of half dislike it. But we'll get more into that later. Before we do that, kind of a brief history of the Funny People film. It's a Universal Studios production. And like I said, it's directed by Judd Apatow. And it stars Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen. Judd Apatow, in the last 5 or 6 years, has been one of the more prolific producers and directors in Hollywood. His previous two directed features, 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up, both grossed massive amounts of money, turned him into kind of the golden boy of Hollywood. And his productions as well have been mostly successful. And he's, like I said, he's been kind of considered the golden boy producer and director of Hollywood for the moment being. And Seth Rogen, his star, has simply just gone nowhere but up since he first made his starring appearance in Knocked Up. He's been in other movies like Observe and Report and Zach and Miri Make a Porno. He was in Pineapple Express. He was in Superbad. So he's been in a lot of movies, many of which have done quite well at the box office. And then Adam Sandler, there's not much else that you can say about Adam Sandler at this point. One of the most recognizable movie stars of the last 10 years. He's in a $100 million hit film every year for the past 7 years. He's kind of inescapable at this point. Love him or hate him, I know a lot of people that hate him. I tend to like Adam Sandler, and I think that Bill also tends to like Adam Sandler.
Yeah, definitely.
He's here to stay, and no matter what the result of this film is, he'll walk away from this untarnished. Let's get into some of the specifics of the film itself. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what did not work for the movie for you?
There was a lot. Mostly it focused on a bunch of people that are trying to make it big in stand-up comedy and mimic exactly what Adam Sandler did in real life and this mimicked character. So they're doing all sorts of bad stand-up, trying to build their routines and helping themselves out, and they talk about their balls over and over again.
There are a lot of dick and ball jokes in this movie. I think that I personally counted, I would say, 24 dick and ball jokes, and there may have even been more than that I missed. One of the big parts of this movie is the stand-up comedy scenes. Seth Rogen does stand-up comedy. He's kind of this young, up-and-coming comic who's been very much inspired by the Adam Sandler character. Adam Sandler, who, as you've probably seen from the trailers, is sick and dying, and he's going back to stand-up. He's kind of going back to his roots to do some of that before he assumes he will pass away. Some of the other characters in this film, like Jonah Hill, who also starred in Superbad and several other Apatow productions, he's a stand-up comic as well. So that's a pretty big theme to this movie, and it kind of meets with some mixed humor. I thought that some of it worked. I rather liked Seth Rogen's stand-up. I thought that his stuff was very self-deprecating and funny in that respect. I did not like the Adam Sandler stand-up. I've never felt that Adam Sandler was a very strong stand-up to begin with, but I just did not like a lot of his material in this movie. And being that this is this is one of those movies that's got a lot of improvisation, I'm wondering if the stand-up was scripted or if they just kind of flew by the seat of their pants. I'm not sure.
I have a funny feeling that most of it was scripted, mostly because the parts that were supposed to be bad were so terrible that I just didn't want to pay attention to the movie anymore. But when they finally went to, good stand-up, I was rolling on the floor at some points. Unfortunately, the good stand-up takes up less than 2 minutes of the movie.
I got the feeling that they filmed about, 100 hours of stand-up, and then, obviously condensed that down into about a half hour and inserted that in the movie. Did you feel that same way as well?
I don't know. I didn't think about that enough.
Because I know, like, when you watch the trailers for the movie, there are a lot of parts in the trailers that aren't in the finished movie itself.
The movie runs, what, 220 minutes?
It's a 2 hour and 20 minute movie. It's an endless movie, and you can tell that a lot of things should have ended up on the cutting room floor. We can talk about that in a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about the trailer, though, because this movie suffers from everything that I hate about movie trailers. It gives away the entire story in the course of a 2 minute and 30 second trailer. You find out that Adam Sandler has some strange disease that I don't think it's ever quite fully told what it is.
They say it's a variant on leukemia.
He gets sick and he assumes he is going to die, and this causes him to kind of reevaluate his life. He starts to do stand-up again because those are his roots. He starts to donate a bunch of his crap to Goodwill. He wants to sell off a lot of his stuff that he doesn't need. He attempts to reconnect with his family to very mixed success. And then perhaps one of the more important parts of the film is he's attempting to reconnect with this lost love, who is played by Leslie Mann, who, it should be noted, is director Judd Apatow's wife. He's cast her in many of his movies. She really gives a very typical Leslie Mann performance, and that is to say, she's very shrill and obnoxious, and she's not likable in the least. And the fact that this part of the plot takes up the last quarter of the movie or so, like the last 45 minutes of it or so, it's very...
It's supposed to be the meat and potatoes of the story.
Right. It's supposed to be the meat and the potatoes of the story, but it's not, because it's condensed into like 40 minutes, the last 40 minutes of the film, and you're supposed to care about these characters, but it's very hard to care about them when they aren't fleshed out. And when you watch the trailer for the movie, it makes it seem like Eric Bana, another actor from this film, who is married to Leslie Mann's character, and Leslie Mann are going to be in this movie throughout the entire thing. And I don't even think that Eric Bana shows up until about an hour and a half in.
Well, I always think it's a bad thing about a movie when Eric Bana is the best thing in it.
I will agree with that.
He plays this Australian businessman who cheats on Leslie Mann's character, Laura, and is very funny about it. Well, not very funny about that, but he's the most outrageous character in the entire movie.
He gets a chance to display his natural Australian accent because he's Australian. This is the first movie I've seen where he actually is able to use that accent. Mostly I watch him playing American characters like in Hulk and Black Hawk Down.
In Troy.
And in Troy, where he's playing a Trojan warrior, but obviously they speak in English and everything, for, you know, Hollywood purposes. But I've never been able to witness him acting as an Australian. And it was quite odd because it's not something that I'm used to, and it almost seemed like it was over the top at points. But I've read interviews that say that no, this is how he really is. He's really like spirited and in high energy. But I don't know whether or not I can believe that or not, because the performance is really over the top. And
if it is, I want to see more of that.
Yeah, I would like to see more of that as well. They could make a movie where Eric Bana was acting like that, and I would pay to see it. But yeah,
not this one.
Not this one. No, not this. It doesn't work. Well, he's only in the movie for about a half hour. He's very undeveloped. He's very one note. There's no reason to particularly care about him or about Leslie Mann, or for that matter, about Adam Sandler's character. I don't think it's a spoiler to say this, but he finds out that, he's not going to die. He's beat the disease, because they say it in the trailer. They say something like, it looks like you might have beaten this. So he tries to reconnect with Leslie Mann. So the last 40 minutes or so of the film...
Well, let's go back a little bit.
Okay.
He finds out he's dying. He does stand-up, which is horrible.
It is.
And Seth Rogen is the guy who's on right after him. And he has to make fun of, Adam Sandler's character, George Simmons, because it was just that bad. And that causes them to meet and build this relationship where Seth Rogen gets Adam Sandler's character to really try and reconnect with his family. It's not Adam Sandler's character at all who's trying to do this. He's being forced into it.
Right, exactly.
And he finally meets up with his one love, the one person he actually loved in his life, and I don't give a crap anymore at this point, because I've been watching this movie for an hour and a half and nothing's happened.
It's really hard to care about his relationship with Leslie Mann. He is not a likable character at all. You know, at one point, he says to Seth Rogen, you know, you're my best friend, and I don't even like you. And it's really hard to identify with a character like that. We got this guy who has, you know, ostensibly has an endless amount of money, and he's picking on this young guy who is kind of just like him, you know, 20 years ago or whatever. You get that feeling. And here he is. He's trying to break up this family and get back together with this woman who, honestly, he doesn't even really love all that much. It's just that one of the best times of his life was spent with her, and he's just gone through this near-death experience. And she feels the same way. She did love him at one time, but she's got a family now and a husband now, and everything like that. And it puts the movie goes from being this comedy fantasy about, like, what if you were to meet, you know, this A-list Hollywood actor and be able to hang out with him, to this dramedy of Adam Sandler wants his ex-girlfriend back. And it's kind of jarring in the way that it works like that.
And, you know, on paper, if you make a skeleton of the plot, I think I actually like it, because the ideas of this famous person dying and learning something about it and finding out he's not going to die and reconciling with that.
And that's the big problem with I Have It, because Adam Sandler learns nothing. And you said this to me when we talked about this movie earlier, and I thought it was very eloquently put. He learns nothing. At the end of the movie, he's the exact same George Simmons character that he is at the beginning. He's miserable, he's lonely, he's a jerk, he's mean to everybody. How can anybody possibly like this guy?
I didn't
like him either. And it's sad, because I did feel sympathy for him in the beginning, because he had this illness and he was going to die young. And I think I felt this sympathy because I did not know his character quite well yet. But over the course of the movie, as I got to know him, as you're presented with this truly awful person, I stopped caring about him completely.
Mm-hmm.
Seth Rogen's character is probably the strongest character. He's the best part of the movie, I gotta say. I really like Seth Rogen a lot. I was suffering from Seth Rogen burnout a few months ago, because he was just doing movie after movie after movie. But his work in this movie has kind of reaffirmed what I saw in him originally. He's a very likable guy. I think he's funny. He's got this very likable, average-type guy look about him. You know, he's talented. He's a talented guy. He definitely is the best part of Funny People, I think. What did you
definitely
think?
Definitely, yeah. And strangely, his little cabal of other, you know, aspiring comedians is probably my favorite part.
Yeah,
their interaction, they seem to gel much better than anything else in this movie.
I would agree with you. And in a movie that has all these ostentatious scenes, these scenes that have just no business being a part of this story, those scenes were my favorite parts of the movie, and that's a bad sign.
Yes, it is. and I hate Jason Schwartzman, who plays the more successful of his friends, who has a recurring role on this fake show, Yo Teach.
And that the Yo Teach stuff was just pure gold. It's every single awful sitcom that you've ever seen, every sitcom cliche, every horrible thing that's on TBS at like 2 in the afternoon during their whatever they call it, their TBS awful comedy block with Tim the Toolman Taylor and all those terrible shows.
Yes.
And Yes Dear. It's like they took all of that and put it into one. And it's really funny, and it works. And like I was saying, it's sad because it has nothing to do with the plot of the movie whatsoever.
Not at all.
But it's the best part. As you said, one of his roommates is played by Jason Schwartzman, who was an actor who first came to recognition for Rushmore, the Wes Anderson film. Mm-hmm. You don't like Jason Schwartzman. I kind of do like Jason Schwartzman. I think he's kind of funny, and he's got like this this kind of cutesy look about him. He's got charisma, The other roommate, whose name is Leo, is played by Jonah Hill, who we mentioned earlier, who is one of the stars of Superbad. I do not like Jonah Hill at all. I think that he is so annoying. I don't think he's funny at all. But I did think that he was acceptable in this movie. I think that his very annoying stand-up and his very annoying shtick worked in this movie. And again, even though I didn't like him, he was one of the better parts of the movie.
Well, if he's going to keep playing the same character, which is really the same thing he played in every other movie he's been in, then he should be in this kind of role.
Agreed. He plays this, as you can imagine, he plays this overweight Jewish kid who, young guy, I shouldn't say kid, young man who is fairly funny and likes to make one-liners and likes to talk about things like blowjobs and cunnilingus and stuff
and
like that.
Just keeps talking and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. He never stops. He makes in the movie, he makes this YouTube video that's him like pretending to do kitty cat stuff. And it's pretty funny because
Genius. Genius.
There are thousands of Yahoo. Thousands of YouTube videos of just these idiots putting their cats doing stupid stuff, and he just skewers it, and it's very funny. It is very funny, but again, has nothing to do with the actual plot itself.
Well, what was his face? Judd Apatow.
Yes.
The things he's written in the past that have done really well, you know, are things like You Don't Mess with the Zohan. You know, Adam Sandler's last movie, which was a lot of fun, and I thought it was great. And these silly, stupid things, you know, Walk Hard. And while he can do the thoughtful presentations in addition to the comedy with Knocked Up and The 40-Year-Old Virgin, Funny People just doesn't have the serious stuff down.
No, the serious stuff in Funny People is the worst stuff. I would agree with you 100%. He balances it very, very well in Knocked Up. It's Knocked Up, I think, is a great film. I think it's one of the best films of 2007. The performances in it are great. Everybody that's in it is great. It's funny. It feels fresh. It's a very long movie as well. It's not as long as Funny People. But again, I think it balances the comedy and the drama in a nice medium way. This film, however, when it goes serious, it's hard to care about it because the serious characters are the unlikable characters. And Seth Rogen is put in this awkward situation in the last 40 minutes of the film where he has to try and rein Adam Sandler's character in, and he can't do that because George Simmons is this A-list celebrity, and, you know, this snot-nosed 25-year-old guy is not going to tell him what to do. So Seth Rogen's trying to not have this family break up, this family that, you know, he's just met this day and feels bad for. Mm-hmm. And it's very awkward. It doesn't quite work. I don't really know what else to say about the drama in it, except that, you know, maybe for Judd Apatow's next movie, he should let someone else write it, or he needs an editor to try and rein. I think he's one of these directors that needs an editor to rein him in and show him when not to veer off the path.
Well, maybe this is the movie to make people do that.
Yeah, and we should talk about that because this movie has not performed well at all.
No.
It hasn't been released in too many areas outside of the United States, because typically Judd Apatow films do not do well outside the United States. They're very, very American comedies. It's American humor. Kind of like when you get the occasional French comedy released here, you know, in the art houses, no one goes and sees it because we don't really get that kind of humor. It's a different culture. Mm-hmm. Well, these films don't do well overseas. They will be released, obviously, but they just haven't been released yet, and I doubt that this film is going to do well overseas.
It's not going to match the massive amount of money that an Adam Sandler movie makes, you know, $47 million.
Right. Last year, you mentioned Zohan earlier. Zohan did $100 million in the States, and it did $100 million overseas. That's $200 million. This film has failed to gross even $50 million in the United States alone. It's been a box office disaster for Universal Studios. Had a budget of $75 million. I don't know what they spent the $75 million on. I really don't, because it's not like it's not like there were aliens and special effects.
Well, for better or worse, Adam Sandler's a very expensive name. Seth Rogen is now a very expensive name. Eric Bana too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Seth Rogen is definitely a lot more expensive now than he was in 2007 when Knocked Up came out.
So many years back when he just came out.
Even that kind of bothers me as well. You know, actors who make ridiculous salaries, but that's a different discussion. This film has not done well domestically. Grossed less than $50 million. It'll end its run probably with about $60 million.
They'll probably make their money back.
Eventually, when all is said and done, they'll make the money back. They might even turn a profit when it comes to like DVD sales and things like that. But it has been a box office failure in a terrible summer for Universal Studios. The hammer is going to have to come down over there. Heads are going to roll. This is like their fourth big flop in a row. They also flopped earlier this year with the Will Ferrell movie Land of the Lost, which also failed to gross even $50 million domestically. It's a misfire for the Apatow crew. I don't think it's going to reflect too poorly on Judd Apatow, though. He's a big-time producer. Even though this film has been a failure, you know, you could name a dozen other of his films that have done well. Adam Sandler will probably walk away from this unscathed. He'll be in a buddy cop movie next year that grosses $150 million or something. You know, I'm sure that he'll be fine. Seth Rogen will probably walk away from this okay. No one's really hurt by the fact that this film doesn't do well, except for the studio.
You know, the people that actually make the movies.
And it's kind of sad because I was really looking forward to this movie a lot. I'm a big Judd Apatow fan, in case you can't tell. I loved 40-Year-Old Virgin. I thought that Knocked Up took everything that was great about 40-Year-Old Virgin and made it even better. So I was really psyched about this. Plus, you throw in Adam Sandler, who is one of the biggest comedy stars in the world. But I just couldn't help but walk away feeling disappointed from this movie. I really liked the first half of it, and then they really lose me in the second half. Once the drama kicks in, the romance, the relationship and romance drama, Apatow has completely lost me. I don't care enough about these characters to invest any amount of time into it.
When I think about it, Adam Sandler is unlike a lot of his contemporaries with Jim Carrey and Robin Williams. Oh, no, I take that back. They're not really contemporaries, but they're similar.
Right.
In that they've all tried to do drama.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, where Jim Carrey and Robin Williams do drama very well, Adam Sandler just doesn't have that in him, I think.
Adam Sandler's dramatic movies have been pretty dismal failures at the box office. You're correct about that. He has received some critical attention. I'm thinking of the 2002 movie he was in, Punch Drunk Love, but you know that was a film that grossed $16 million at the box office. Some of the other dramatic movies he's been in are he was in Spanglish, which did not do well at the box office, which I actually thought is a very good movie. And then Rain Over Me, which again fared very poorly, about $20 million at the box office. But then you look at an Adam Sandler comedy film, like, you know, just for example, 51st Dates grosses $150 million. So his drama films do not typically do well, whereas, like you said, Jim Carrey can be in a movie like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, and it's a big critical hit, and it does well at the box office, and it does even better on DVD. That movie sold 10 million copies on DVD or something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
And then Robin Williams can be in a drama movie like, you know, Dead Poets Society or something else and get an Oscar nomination in Good Will Hunting and get another Oscar nomination for that. And it seems like Adam Sandler is not able to duplicate the same kind of success in his dramatic movies.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we do here at Cult It or Can It is we ultimately decide, should we put this film in the cult? That is this film good enough to make this kind of a, you know, this elite rank, I guess, to say, not really elite, but kind of, is it bad or is it good? And, you know, it's
would you watch it again?
There you go. Would you watch it again? The rules are not hard and fast when it comes to this. Having said that, Bill, would you cult this or would you can it?
I would never watch this thing ever again. Can it?
The only way that I would ever watch this is if there was a director's cut of it that was shorter, but director's cuts, as you mentioned to me earlier, which I thought was hilarious, what'd you say about director's cuts?
They're never shorter.
They're never shorter. I gotta say, can this as well. It hurts to say that because this movie had so much potential. Any final thoughts on Funny People?
Just that you sound like your pet your childhood pet died when when you said that.
Well, you know, one of the things that I'm able to do is I'm able to take a look at a movie that has a whole bunch of people in it that I like and still see it with a critical eye. And if it sucks, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm going to tell you that it sucks. And I like pretty much everybody that's involved in this movie. I really like Seth Rogen. I really like Adam Sandler a lot. I like Jason Schwartzman. I like Eric Bana. I like the director, Judd Apatow. But I don't like this movie. It doesn't work for me.
Well, like you said, and I definitely agree with you, I don't think anybody's going to be hurt by this and will be, you know, saying something good about each one of them, you know, in a year.
Has this film, final question, has this film surprised you in that it's done badly at the box office?
Yes, but that is only because it has Seth Rogen and Adam Sandler and Eric Bana in it.
There you go. Good point. Good point. It should be mentioned that Eric Bana was the villain also in Star Trek from earlier this year, a film which is
so good.
Yeah, very, very good. And perhaps an underwritten role, but I still enjoyed his character in it, I'm not going to lie. But, all right, any final thoughts on Funny People?
I thought I said my final thoughts.
Oh, you probably did. I'm just, I am just
ADD. Only that you sounded like your childhood pet died.
All right, so
would you like another final thought?
No, that is my final thought. So for Culted or Canon, I am Zach, and my co-host today was
Bill.
And thank you for listening, and we hope that you tune in next time. As an aside, please remember that you can visit our blog at www.cultedorcanon.blogspot.com. So that's all that I've got for you today. Hopefully you enjoyed the show. Drop us a line. Let us know what you thought of it.
Anime, manga, games, industry insight, fandom, diverse. All of these words help to describe one of the most refreshing anime podcasts ever created. The Anime 3000 panel with Sean Russell brings together various podcasters, bloggers, as well as members of the Otaku Press to discuss a wide range of topics. Each show brings you a variety of unique perspectives with consistency and flair. Check us out today and hear some of your favorite podcasters square off over topics that include anime, giant robots, trends in technology, gaming, manga, and much more. Visit us at anime3000.com or get up-to-the-minute news through Twitter, keyword anime3000. The Anime 3000 panel with Sean Russell. Don't just listen, discuss.
If you hated it, you hated it. If you liked it, you liked it. We just want to know. So please stop by and share some feedback.